Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
You are tuned in to Firehouse.com's podcast live from the Firehouse Expo 2010 in Baltimore, Maryland. Like last year, we had the opportunity to have a panel of conversations with Billy Hayes of Washington, D.C. Fire and EMS, Dan Byrne from Buford, South Carolina, and Bill Delaney from Montgomery County, Maryland's Fire and Rescue Service. Today's topic, we're going to talk about fire and life safety education and some of the issues surrounding that in this environment that we're dealing with this day and age. But first, what I would like to do is allow each of our panel members to introduce themselves and tell a little bit about themselves and things that they're working on and so on. So Billy Hayes, why don't you start?
Hi, I'm glad to be here today. Billy Hayes, District of Columbia Fire and EMS Department, Director of Community Affairs, which includes public information and customer service and public education.
Dan?
Daniel Byrne, I'm the Fire Marshal with the City of Buford Fire Department in Buford, South Carolina. I oversee fire prevention to include inspections, public education, public information, and as I'm told, all other duties as may deem necessary by the fire chief in that particular morning.
And another Bill.
Yeah, Bill Delaney with Montgomery County Fire Rescue. I'm the program manager for fire and injury prevention programs, also a bit of social media, sometimes PIO work.
Okay, excellent. Let me, and by the way, my name is Mike Love. I'm a retired Fire Marshal of Montgomery County, Maryland, and happy to be here with you today. I also share a podcast with Ed Camo called Fire Marshal's Corner, which put in a plug for that. So if you have time, listen to those as well. Let me start with Dan. Dan, what really bothers you or worries you at this point in time in your job as getting the word out or educating the public?
There's actually a long list of things that worries and concerns me, especially in today's economy. With the fire departments facing budgets across the country, of course, it's the fellow prevention people that are the first to take a hit. And it's to me that we're continuing to throw leaves into the wind. We're focused on suppression and keeping the firefighters on the fire trucks, and that is very important. By all means, that's very important. But we're continuing to put firefighters on fire trucks to respond to fires that are preventable and therefore continue to put them at risk, more wear and tear on the equipment, more wear and tear on the personnel. So with the economy being driven nowadays, that's one of my biggest concerns is the shift is beginning to fall once again off of prevention. And also the uneducated opinion of the public that fires are on the decline and it's something that's beyond their control. It's something that'll happen to somebody else. So I think those two forces are the big ones and as well as many other small ones that are coming together to create a problem for us.
Okay, thanks. Same question, Bill Hayes.
I just finished up a presentation specifically talking about firefighter safety, because as we continue to move our efforts in reducing firefighter line of duty deaths and line of duty injuries, where do we have an impact on reducing that with public education? Implementing public education programs to reduce risk within the community and also to our personnel is I think essential in what we need to accomplish as a fire service. And if our mission is to protect lives and property, we also have to focus on those lives that we're protecting are our very own, our own firefighters. So I think we have to continue our movement towards aggressive public education programs, fire prevention programs, and I'd be remiss if I didn't include sprinklers in there, because we haven't lost a firefighter in a functionally sprinkler building yet. And I hope that yet never comes, and if we can continue our progress towards the implementation of sprinklers in residential structures, and I think it's going to reduce those line of duty deaths.
Excellent, thanks. Bill Delaney, what worries you these days?
Well, I think Dan and Billy both summed up a lot of my concerns, and of course, one of my main concerns was losing a great fire marshal here recently to retirement. But in all seriousness, along those lines is just that what we're even seeing in the Washington metro area and have been for last year or so is, except for actually Washington, D.C., is public fire and life safety educators positions being cut. And we now actually have a couple of departments in the area that used to have fire and life safety educators but don't. And we've seen across, as you saw too, across the board, those in fire code enforcement, which are, I think, partners of public education folks, seeing significant cutbacks there. So I think just like anybody else is with the economic climate, as usual, prevention seems to be kind of the first on the chopping block and seems to be in the Washington metro area for us as well.
Okay, excellent. Let me ask a question then, and I think you kind of helped me segue into something that might be an opportunity for us to get the operational forces more involved. Let's say the jurisdiction cuts their full-time staff of public education, and I guess you have to compel the fire chief to maybe go in the direction of having more activities on the operational side that take up that slack. Dan, can you say anything about your department as to whether you're doing those kind of programs or would consider the operational forces doing more public education than they already were?
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things that I've always been an advocate of is if our people are not educated on the fire problem, then how can we effectively educate our citizens? That our line firefighters come in contact with our best way to describe it is our customers on a daily basis. In my department, we did lose the assistant fire marshal position, which caused me to have to, in terms of building inspections and things like that, kind of started to slide off a little bit. In the state of South Carolina, you have to, in order to do fire codes, you have to be an official certified fire inspector. And the fire inspection program is very expensive. It's a week long, and that would involve more costs and overtime and cost for the class. So what we've done is we've taken all of our line personnel and trained them to basic in-house to 1031 standard. They're not fire inspectors, but they're trained enough, and we have a repetitive program enough that they can walk into a building. We call it the engine company survey program to advise the building owner of any potential problems that they see. The benefit that is to me is I've got my engine companies out in the businesses. They're getting familiar with the buildings. They're noticing hazards, trying to advise the business owners on how to correct them. I've got two inspectors that are on engine companies. So now that allows me, when I get this paperwork back from the operational forces, I can look at the paperwork and find the buildings that we really need to get an official fire inspection in. So I can take my two fire inspectors and target them exactly where they need to be. And we're not taking a shotgun approach of walking into businesses with fire inspectors doing inspections in buildings that are okay, but focusing where they need to be. And this also gets the engine companies more involved with the public, more involved with education, and more knowledgeable. So it's a program we've just started, shows a lot of promise. We got some tweaking to do, but I think that's going to be a mainstay of our operation for prevention and using our operational forces.
Excellent. Bill Delaney, you have some experience with some of these types of programs. What are a couple challenges that you found logistically in helping the field firefighters do some of the public education outreach type work?
Yeah, and we do try to use our field forces quite extensively, and especially in our department with 34 stations and about 1 million population, that's necessary. One thing we were able to actually implement a couple years ago before this downturn was, and it's a good resource for anyone out there in this room, is NFA has a great online class, Q118, Community Safety Educators. And right now all our recruits, when they go through recruit school, as part of their probationary period, they are, within the first year, required to complete that online class. For the experienced public educator, you'd probably look at that class and you know, definitely for the group that's with me here and I think out in the audience there, it's a very basic course, but I think it sends a message first of all, and it also gives them at least some background in presenting public education programs, because everyone in the department should be a life safety educator. So that's one of the ways we do it. And of course, We provide links on our quick links, our in-house web site to with educational materials on different topics and getting on information to try to bring a lot of the folks up to snuff on the various issues. And when there's hot topics, I try to get some information out on, again, if we're seeing a lot of cooking fires or whatever the case may be, to get it out to the field folks so that they can see it and become aware of it and with all the safety tips they should be talking about.
Okay, thanks. Billy Hayes, you in D.C. have recently initiated, I guess within that last month, a pretty intensive program, I believe, of door-to-door smoke alarm distribution. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, our program in D.C., it's actually been going for a couple of years, but we've put it back into place simply because of funding. Budget has come up as an issue. We had money that was allotted within our operating budget for smoke alarms, and it was eliminated, unfortunately, so we've had to rely on grant funding. So those grants have just came in, as well as the alarms. But we have an overall program called Save You, and it stands for Smoke Alarm Verification Utilization. And every Saturday, well, one Saturday a month, we'll target a community where we haven't been, and we keep track of this, to where we go out, knock on the door to door. We take companies that are out of service, usually about 5 to 6 companies, spread them geographically through this targeted area, and they go door to door installing smoke alarms. We just don't hand them out. We install them, and these are carbon monoxide smoke alarms, so they're combination alarms, and we'll put one per level. So a lot of our houses in D.C. are row houses, so we find ourselves putting in 3 or 4. The intriguing thing is specifically in the southeast area of Washington, D.C., we had a fire where there was, we actually did a Save You last month, and within 3 hours we installed 130 smoke alarms in an area that was probably about 6 blocks wide. So that tells you the need in that specific area. And then unfortunately we had a double fatality 2 weeks ago, and we went back out, and our second phase of our smoke alarm program is called Return to the Scene. So we'll go back immediately the following day and target that area, blitz it with public education, and doing the same thing, knocking on doors and installing smoke alarms. And within a couple hours, we installed another 30 to 40 smoke alarms. So it's paid off for us, and this program was initiated after we lost a 7-year-old in a fire a few years ago when Chief Rubin had just arrived to Washington, D.C. So the other piece that we look at is we have personnel that enter the smoke alarm data into a system, and we GIS those. So we know where smoke alarms are, so we can go back and see where we've been. And the benefit of that is when we talk about measurement and of data and fire prevention programs, is if we do have an event occur, we can go back and see, did we have a working smoke alarm there? And if the people got out, we can actually show a success because it was an alarm that we installed.
Are these 10-year battery smoke alarms?
They operate off of AA's.
Okay.
We haven't found the 10-year dual combination alarms yet. At least we haven't been able to. So, but the other piece is we also give out batteries. If they have smoke alarms and just need batteries, we'll give them batteries as well. So,
excellent. One more follow-up. You emphasized that you didn't just give these smoke alarms away. You installed them. Can you tell more about that?
Yeah, we have a discussion with the firefighters. We do a briefing before we send them out, and most of the firefighters in Washington, D.C. have participated in the Save You, so they're familiar with how they install. But, you know, with the companies that go out, we also send a service unit out, and we put extension ladders, drills, tool bags, we put all this in their hand, and they actually go into the homes. They know the proximity, where to keep it away from vents and air exchanges and ceiling fans and doors and windows. The kitchen area, that kind of stuff, and they actually install the alarm themselves. So when they leave that house, there's a working smoke alarm installed. And unfortunately, I've heard the story before where fire departments will give out a smoke alarm and don't install it. The firefighters respond to an event, and they find that smoke alarm still in the box because the family's never installed it. So if you think of why 80% of fire deaths are occurring in homes without a working smoke alarm, if it's because they just don't take the time or have the ability to change a battery in a smoke alarm, what makes you think they're going to install it themselves? So we try to do that for them.
Very good. And you know, it's interesting because, you know, I had the opportunity to present this morning on the fire problem in the United States. And you know, just looking for some new research into, you know, injury prevention and so on. And one I did come across that was sponsored by Centers for Disease Control, talked about that there was evidence that when a working smoke alarm was in a residence, that it reduced fire-related injuries. And you know, that sounds obvious, but there's something else at work there besides just the notification. It's the awareness of the working smoke alarm being there. So I think that these programs really do have an impact. Of course, you know, you hate to think that that behavior of the occupants would be that they would neglect the next smoke alarm and you have to go and reinstall it, but it's certainly better than none at all. So, okay, well, let's kind of switch gears for a second and talk about more about public ed in a poor economy, and you know, just Lance, this bill, talk about some of the things that maybe you've thought about that you'd like to do now that you know you might have some opportunity because of this economy, even though it's, you know, it's a negative and it's a downturn. What kind of things are opportunities?
Well, I think, you know, when we talk about partnerships, and we have now a little bit for a couple years, and one thing we were able to do is partner up with our local state, well, not local, state Department of Mental Health and Hygiene, where we were given 10-year lithium smoke alarms. And it was targeted towards seniors or low-income families. And that's something that I think in the fire service we traditionally don't think about, you know, those types of partnerships. I mean, how many people would think, hey, we can get free smoke alarms from the state mental health and hygiene department? But that was indirectly through CDC, and because they have a grant program that they get out to all their state mental or state health groups. So it's really an opportunity to get with groups because everyone's looking to partner in this bad economy and because everyone's finding, no matter what industry you're in, that you can't do it alone. And so I think there's some great opportunities out there to get with these groups and to do things like that. I think this is a great opportunity, too, going back to what a few of us were just talking about before, you know, with Dan in South Carolina and just Billy there, you know, getting the line firefighters more involved because guess what? They're going to have to. Especially as these, if we are starting to lose more and more prevention positions. Number one, I think we'd all agree here that they should be, everyone in our department should be a public educator and a prevention person. Line firefighter to all the way up to the chief. But I think it's a great opportunity to start making that case to get them more and more involved. And using that Q118 online course from NFA, again, it's free. So no one can argue that, you know, when you go to the fire chief to propose training the troops, that's a free program. How can you argue that in tough economic times? So I think it is a good way to get them more involved.
Okay. Dan, can you talk about any partnerships that you've developed in Buford that you've seen as being helpful to, you know, get the word out beyond your scope of the fire marshal's office?
Well, both inside the scope and outside the scope, we have a lot of relationships in our community and have for a while, dealing with our target audience, which are people who are living in low income neighborhoods, and partnering up with everything from social services all the way down to churches that go into these neighborhoods and do their kind of fire safety, and we do ours. So there's a lot of partnership opportunities out there. One of the things, like to go back to your question that you asked earlier on opportunities in a down economy, and there's two distinct opportunities for fire departments now. First opportunity is getting the adults, and I've been a big advocate of making sure adults are being educated as much as the children. Adults control fire prevention in the home, and they also have bigger influence over the attitudes and behaviors of children in the home than we do in the short amount of time we might be with them. So it's important to reach adults. Being that we're in this tight economy, there are a lot of businesses and corporations that are looking to minimize risk and save on money, save on costs, and fire prevention is definitely one of them. And we're finding more business owners are more receptive to coming in and doing training for their employees, fire extinguisher training and things like that, for that reason alone, because they can't afford to have a fire. They can't afford to have any type of financial setback. So there's a lot of opportunities in the adult audiences to get out there now for fire departments. And then there's also an opportunity for the fire department itself. Again, because the economy is taking the turn that it has, everybody is looking at their community services and asking, well, what are you doing? what is our fire department doing for us on a daily basis? Where's the value and the amount of money we're paying in taxes, and should we be paying it? Where should we trim? This is an awful great opportunity for fire departments to step up to the plate, to show a daily value in their community every day, not just when there's a fire, but every day in prevention. And now with the economy, the cynicism that's out there in the community, some of the despair that's out there, for the fire department to come through and demonstrate their daily value in the lives and the quality of life of their citizens, who also, as well, just like I mentioned, corporations, really appreciate prevention. You know, insurance costs to go to the doctors, the automobile insurance, everybody is now beginning to realize it's much more cost-effective to reduce exposure, injury, and risk than it is to file a claim. So that is starting to become a quality of life issue in every community. So this is an opportunity for fire departments to really come through and demonstrate their value in everyday life of a community before the fire.
Well, that is a really good point, and demonstrating your value is something that has never been any more important than now. But let me take off on that particular area there, because years ago, decades ago, NFPA used to do an annual fire prevention contest for jurisdiction. They had the different size jurisdiction, and you had to create a way of demonstrating or presenting what you've done throughout the year so that, you know, the judges can look at that. Do you have anything, Billy Hayes, in D.C., as to how you might webpage or something to show your activities, you're demonstrating the value to the residents of Washington, D.C.?
You know, the audience in Washington, you have to say that they're not different than anywhere else, but truly they are. We have some areas in Washington, D.C. that are some of the most impoverished areas in our nation. Then we have some that are the most affluent and economically sound. So we have two distinct spectrums. And kind of where we're going with this is social media. And when we're talking about the opportunities that may exist, and I know Bill Delaney does an incredible job. In fact, we modeled a lot of what we've done in Washington, D.C. after what he's doing in Montgomery County. And I think that's, we talk about a budgetary concern. There's no harm in utilizing a program that already exists. It doesn't cost money to utilize what somebody else is already doing, especially if it's successful. We do have Facebook and Twitter, and we put that message out. Unfortunately, a lot of the people who are following us on Facebook and Twitter are industry-type people, other people who are in other fire departments. So we're at the infancy stages of trying to get that launched within our community. But the reason I brought up the demographics and socioeconomics is that there are some areas where people don't have computers, so how do you reach them? We have a serious problem in the schools and our ability to access the schools. So to show the people in the schools the programs that we have, many of the staff is here in attendance, and they can tell you that we have an abundance of resources. And what I mean resources is we have been very successful in adding positions to our division. We've been successful in funding not only smoke alarms through grants and the original funding, but also the equipment we have. We've just purchased 2 Bullex fire extinguisher simulators. We have the Fatal Vision goggles that we're working on, a alcohol impairment public education program for our colleges. We have several universities in the District of Columbia. So we're in the infancy stages of actually launching many of the programs. So to get to your question, no, we don't have a way of showing that to the public as of yet. So that's on our agenda to really focus that and market ourselves better than what we've done in the past.
Now, I'm going to be all over the board here, but you bring up an excellent point, and I'm going to take advantage of that. One of the things that we were required to do when I was in that position was to measure performance and to see what the perception of the public was. Well, initially you think, SurveyMonkey, Zoomerang.com, any of those things are excellent, but they don't get to the right people. They get to the people who want to take those kind of surveys. It's unfortunate because it's so easy to do it that way. But you, to really get how people feel about you and the job you're doing, you have to beat the street and be out there. And somehow those firefighters might be able to at least get a survey done or something like that. So
one of the things that we've actually experienced, especially in when we go out to do a Save You event, the fire service themselves, the firefighters in operations, they don't get overly excited. If they're going to a fire, they get excited. If they're going to a training opportunity where they know they're going to put their gear on and fight fire, they get excited. To say that we're going out to do a Save You event, that's not the most exciting thing of their day. They go and do it, and they do a great job. The interesting thing is when they come back and they give us the paperwork and say, here's where we've been, here's what we've done, they say, you know, we didn't know that there was that many people that did not have smoke alarms. And that's our own profession, our own individuals. And that's not just D.C., that's everywhere. I've experienced it when I was a chief in Riverdale, and we went out and did the same thing. It's like, we didn't know this. So it's educating our own members before we can tell the public what we're doing. We have to educate our own internal members of the success and what we're doing.
Mike, I'd like to touch on something, too. And you brought up a very good point in terms of technology, SurveyMonkey, and not getting feedback from the people that we need to. And the same can be said for those of the people that we need to make sure we're reaching. And like I say in my presentation, the children, when you're looking at your fire prevention program numbers, you need to look at who you're talking to, because more often than not, the children that can afford to come to the fire station for a field trip or the communities that can afford to do the things they do normally are not the ones who need you, or normally are not in the school districts who are more likely to have a fire. So when you start getting into technology, it's a good tool, it can be used, but is it getting to the people who really, honest and truly need it? So that's a point we always have to be conscious of and look at our numbers. Where are we going, and are we hitting our target audiences?
Yeah, no doubt, and that's that is a challenge, because you really do. You don't want to be doing a program and not knowing whether it's good or bad, or it's reaching the people. Do they find value in it? Or because, you know, maybe there's something else that they need, and you should be doing that. So you really have to know. You really have to use multiple ways to get feedback. And my gosh, I'd love to hear if you ever come up with a number for what the percentage is that you find of homes without smoke alarms, and next year what it's going to be. Maybe hopefully it'll be lower. But
yeah.
Bill, what can you say about social media?
Social media? No, just some very good points here, and it got me thinking. Taking a step back first is that in Montgomery County, as you know, I went back to try to look at some stuff. Where are we having fires? And I was kind of laughing because, like D.C., we have a pretty diverse county where we have some pretty areas that are pretty well off economically, and others that aren't. And the funny thing I found over the last few years is the fires we're having don't seem to discriminate. Age, race, sex, economic conditions, it seems to really run the gamut. So that was kind of interesting as they were saying that. But social media, actually, interestingly enough, the USFA just yesterday came out with a statement saying, you know, we need to do a better job of reaching adults, and especially before they reach the senior age. And, you know, they talked about how we theoretically do a good job, although I agree with, you know, Dan's statement and what Billy was talking about 100%. You know, we sort of do a better job of getting the kids, but sort of after that, we don't do a good job, and then we try to hit the seniors as best we can. And it really said you really need to hit the in-between. And the one thing I am finding with the social media is that, number one, the good news is, for the purpose of this discussion, it's free. All of it's free. And a matter of fact, there's some very good analytical tools called Google Analytics. That's a free thing that you can plug into your blogs and see how many people are showing up. And actually, you can see demographically where they're tuning in from, so that you know that it's not someone from China, you know, coming in, and so on and so forth. But and it goes from there right down to, you can even see where they're, if they're viewing it on a BlackBerry or iPad. Right on down there. And but I can also see through that demographics, we're really hitting the 20-somethings to about early 50-somethings, which is the age the USFA was just saying we need to hit. And again, I don't know that it's a true prevention program, but I know that we are seeing results in getting feedback from these sites where people are saying, I'll send out a safety tip. And they'll say, hey, I didn't know that. I just learned something, and I also forwarded on to about 10 friends of mine. We use Twitter, Facebook, a blog, YouTube, and a couple other things, because I think the one thing you got to be careful with social media too is you know, Twitter by itself is okay, but it's not the solution. Facebook by itself is okay, but it's not the solution. You have to have the whole package together and kind of combine them as one. And what I'm finding too is I try to draw people in. Not only do I publish fire and injury prevention tips, but also we get those, you know, sort of news articles out there and some photos out there. And they could be photos of our firefighters in action, and we've also had our firefighters at community events. And that way, that draws people in who maybe are more trying to find the blood and gut stories, if you will. But now all of a sudden, they're signed up, they're linked in, and they're also inadvertently getting our safety messages, too, when they come out. And the beauty of the social media, too, is you can also interact with these people. And again, like I said, we've gotten a lot of feedback. We've actually had requests for smoke alarms saying, talking about what Billy was saying with the experience in D.C., I've actually had people contact me after I put out a smoke alarm safety information through social media, say, I didn't know. I thought the house was too old. I didn't know that house needed to have a smoke alarm in it. And I don't have any. Can you help me? And so we've had some very nice anecdotal type of things like that. So it's still in its infancy. We're still learning a lot about it. But that's not the total answer. As everyone here has said, I mean, we've got to do a little bit of everything. But I think it's a nice extra tool that, again, it's the beauty of it, it's free. It doesn't cost a dime.
And last week, Facebook hit the threshold of 500 million members, which is, several nations large or equal to several nations large. So, I mean, and that's only 6 years that they've been in existence. It makes me think, and I'd like to talk about some other ideas for how to obtain resources, and preferably free, more of these types of things. But was it Santa Barbara who did the fire residential fire sprinkler videos on YouTube?
Yes, it was.
And they were so, you really enjoyed watching them. Excellent. Anything like that in the works in Buford?
No, I think we are going to look to Facebook and to some other avenues such as that. And talking about how a success story that the reception that you have, I started sending small emails out just to start it off, just a local group of people that I've worked with in the community. It's a good way to stay in touch, always in contact, because you get an email back, I've been meaning to have you come back and talk to us again. But it's real quick, a picture. Because you get those people that are looking for the accident on the freeway with quick safety tips. And the success story, I just sent it out and it gets forwarded on. And I got feedback one time from a colonel in Texas who somehow my email had filtered through the system to him. And he wanted my permission to reproduce the email and put it on a newsletter because he was in charge of the housing units there at whatever base he was at. So it's a very useful tool. The only thing I would caution on that, and being relying too heavily on that. For example, you can send out a great safety tip, and I use this in my presentation on fire extinguishers, the importance of having them. But for someone that's never actually picked up a fire extinguisher, executed PASS, and used a fire extinguisher, that safety tip is nothing more than an interesting topic to read. And I've learned that through doing fire safety training annually with several businesses in our area. Even though I go every year, there's still some people, they can recite PASS and they can recite it, but when it comes to actually pulling the pin to put out a live fire, it's a totally different story. So this technology has a very important role in what I call fire safety awareness as a constant reminder, but there has got to be education and training behind that as well, and that will add more emphasis to those safety messages. You know, if it shows up in Facebook, that's right, I remember when I went and I got that presentation for the fire department room and I did that, it adds more value to what it is that you've done. So technology is great, and we plan on getting more and more involved in it, but not to be too reliant on it that we, 100 people have seen our fire safety tips, but what did that mean to them?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. And, it kind of brought to my mind, I thought about how, the Wii games with the motion realism in those have become so popular that, maybe someday, and you just talked about your fire extinguisher simulator, opportunity there. Maybe there's some way that we can package something like that for home use, and it's not the real thing, but it is. You're exactly. Still going through the motions.
Hand-eye coordination.
Kind of neat, but Billy, I can see Chief Rubin in a YouTube about fire safety. I think that would be excellent. What do you think?
Actually, we just completed a video, and it'll be shown tomorrow in our presentation, because when you talk about public education, the presentation we're doing tomorrow is public information, education, and relations, and our ability to try to put that together. The video that we're going to be showing tomorrow is one that we created with a grant from the National Fallen Firefighter Foundation. It's on firefighter safety is the primary key, but it's on sprinklers, residential sprinklers. January 1st, 2009, we received a call for a house fire where a person's trapped. Unfortunately, New Year's Day, we led off in the Washington, D.C. department with 6 fire fatalities. And the house was not sprinklered, as many of the homes in D.C. are not. And we worked aggressively as they were rebuilding the structure to reach out to our community partners through Common Voices, Fire Team USA, Livingston Fire Sprinkler Protection, and other agencies in the area, as well as our own D.C. government. As this house was being rebuilt to sprinkler it, and the house now has a sprinkler, it's a 13 residential sprinkler system now. That's not going to bring family members back, but we're utilizing that video, and this was Chief Rubin's idea, to put this out to not only the fire service and to our members, to let people know how important sprinklers are, because that fire may get past the fire extinguisher phase and the sprinkler is going to activate, and sprinklers aren't designed to extinguish fires. They're for life safety, to hold the fire in a position to where life safety can escape. So this video will be launched, but we do have a YouTube site, and we do try to produce videos. We have one on our Save You program that explains what it is. But having that video capability, the entertainment world is infotainment now, and we have to put that information in a package to where the public is excited to see it, and it's not just another safety message. So we're already heading that direction.
Well, you know, Firehouse.com does a lot. When they do these podcasts, they'll often provide other links and materials on that site where you can click on it. So it might be a good idea to talk with Firehouse.com and ask them if they would, you know, put that link. I know they would be, you know, more than thrilled to do that. But Bill, talk about some other types of maybe resources that are available or could be available. Grants, you know, and I'm not talking about federal grants, which is an excellent program, but what about all the other potential resources for grants and gifts and awards to be able to bolster your supplies and materials and that kind of thing?
Well, a lot of times, you know, looking towards some of even your public utilities, we have a wonderful relationship with PEPCO, which is the local predominant energy provider in Montgomery County and I think a little bit of D.C. and a little bit of Wash Metro area. And they present us every year with visual smoke alarms for free. You know, of course, the tough part about grants a lot of times is you either have to match them or there's a lot of paperwork. But it's a matter of getting out. And I believe that whole program started, you know, they don't know what they don't know. And I think sometimes we fail to go out to some of our business partners, and a lot of these businesses have foundations that you don't know that they have, and they are looking for community projects, because obviously, you know, yes, they want to do something nice for the community, but you know, it's also PR for them as well. And our only requirement is we need to do a little press event for them to highlight and say, yay, PEPCO, you know, and they're doing this wonderful thing, which of course we're always happy to do, and that's what most of them want. So a lot of times your utility companies are glad to help out. They have little caches set aside to help with community projects. I'm working, believe it or not, with all the lawyer jokes out there, I'm actually working with a local law firm. And it looks like we're going to get about 1,000 smoke alarms. The only thing they ask is they want to come along and help us install them. Which, sure, yeah, more the merrier. Absolutely. You know, so again, it's, I think there's opportunity because even in these tough times, people, there is still money out there within these businesses and these foundations, and they're looking to help, and they are looking more towards community-focused projects, especially in these tough economic times. So they're even more open to it. So it's a question of just making sure you're getting out there and not just, again, thinking of traditional fire service partners, but I mean, again, here we have potentially a law firm, you know, looking to do this.
So ask anybody and everybody frequently.
Worst they can say is no.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, that's just it.
Bill, you brought up a good point. People don't know what they don't know.
Yeah.
And then the fire service has got to break out of the role of sitting behind the bay doors waiting for the call. We make it a point. My fire chief, current fire chief, came up through prevention. He's a former fire marshal. And the chief previous to that were very community-based, that the fire department and engine companies need to be out in the community at every turn. Every opportunity that there is to be out there, need to have a fire truck there interacting with the public, because that is when you're going to come across those community partners in just a general discussion at the bumper of the fire truck or after a fire safety presentation or whatever you're doing to determine that, well, oh, I didn't know you needed that. Well, we might have a grant that might help you supplement that. We did just finished a target, we call it Target Hazard Program. The article will be appearing in Firehouse in the next few months, working with local hotels. And we turned around and got a $5,000 grant. Didn't ask for it. They just thought this was a great program. We wanted to be community involved. It was a Holiday Inn, and gave us a check for $5,000. But had we not made that initial contact to do that, that would have been $5,000 we never received. You never know where that money is going to come from. They don't know what you want. But you have to get out there and you have to interact. And if the public sees you constantly interacting with them and with the community and doing community things, not traditional fire prevention all the time, but community things, you're more likely to have access to that funding and those partnerships that you need.
You know, I often thought that, and these are good points, Dan, because it brings me to think about, you know, what if you were to publicize a list of needs and kind of keep it current? Here's 10 things that we really need to have, and, you know, make people aware of it either through letters or, you know, even in the newspaper, and add a newspaper here, your local fire department, fire and life safety education, you know, really needs to buy a new hazard house or something like that. Is there anybody out there that can help us out with it? You know,
sure.
I don't know. I mean, that's kind of aggressive, but on the other hand, you know.
Well, I'd strongly recommend going through your city government. We're very fortunate in Beaufort. We have a city government that's very supportive of prevention, very supportive. So for us to ask for money when they'd probably be willing to give us the money, so you want to double check and make sure of where your funding's at before you go saying, hey, the fire department has these needs, because that could wind up hurting you in the long run. So you just want to double check before you do that.
Absolutely. Okay, good. That's good advice. And,
actually, if I could bring up real quick, and this isn't this was something, and you know, you were there too as well, at the Vision 2020 symposium a couple weeks ago, that was actually here in Baltimore, an interesting program along the lines of funding was brought up by Cindy Gaudetis from College Station, Texas. And I think this is possible here anywhere in the U.S. pretty much, but they partnered with their local United Way. And to the point where the United Way actually put together a grant, if you will, and they actually administered the grant, and it was for a smoke alarm program similar to what we've all described here and I think do, and they were able to get funds and do that through their local United Way. With basically all they had to do was provide, you know, the firefighters to help install the alarms and some logistical support, and that was it. The United Way staff even handled, again, all the administration for the whole program. So that's just something to look into, possibly in your areas, to contact your local United Way. And I know the College Station United Way, that particular area, that rep was there, and they're happy to be references to help any other local United Way do that. So I think that's something for everyone out there to look at. I know I'm certainly going to be looking at that, maybe even for the National Capital Area, you know, for our whole region.
Well, you know, you mentioned Potomac Electric Power Company, PEPCO, and, you know, they have been helpful to all of us in the region. And Billy Hayes probably was able to, you know, see how they've had this impact as well. But they recently did, in cooperation with Washington, D.C. Fire Department, Prince George's County Fire Department, and Montgomery County, the wrapping of the Metro bus, which really turned out nice. I mean, that thing really stands out. And they move it around to different jurisdictions and different bus depots so that everybody gets exposed. What do you all think about, Billy, what do you think about a, you know, big wrap billboard like that? Impact?
Oh, absolutely. In the marketing area, they say a business with no sign is a sign of no business. And if we, as Daniel said, have our bay doors closed, and if we're not out there aggressively trying to sell our message, people aren't going to know what we're doing, and our value within the community is going to shrink. So having that bus out there, especially for those who take public transportation, at least in the district and in many of our areas in Montgomery County, that's the only form of transportation they may have simply because they can't afford a vehicle, whether it be a car note, whether it be insurance, whether it be fuel. So public transportation, well, having a bus that has got fire chiefs on it and is talking about smoke alarms save lives, and they're riding that bus, they're seeing that message. That billboard's there. There's our business sign right in front of them. So I think that was one of the most strategically effective programs and ideas that we've implemented in the Capital Region.
Yeah, and I know you all have also experienced the giving of smoke alarms from them. So that's been a huge help for all of us when we really needed it in these tough times. And they just seem to have a limitless ability to help. At least I've found it limitless. Switching to speeds a little bit, in October, of course, we have our annual Fire Prevention Week where we even have more focus on fire and life safety issues, and traditionally our once a year hurrah for that. But what are some of the areas that you guys are thinking about in terms of focuses this year? Dan?
Well, one of the things that just recently happened in my county, we have a county, Beaufort County Fire Chiefs Association, and they have designated the Fire Marshal Committee that operates under that to handle all public education and messages for the entire county. So that's a huge asset. So we're not competing with different messages across the county in different jurisdictions. We're all going to speak as one voice. One of the messages I think we're going to focus on next year, just like the United States Fire Administration or NFPA come down with certain captions for that particular Fire Prevention Week, we're trying to think a little bit outside the box. Last year, what we did in Beaufort, we discussed the importance of we're having a lot of two stories now. We're no longer building out, we're building up. So our message was, well, what's your how are you going to get out of your house if you can't get down through your stairs? And we used fire escape ladders as a means to promote fire escape ladders. And Lowe's was kind enough to donate 50 ladders that we're able to get out in the community to make that an awareness. This year, the message that I would like to get out, and these messages are designed to get people to think, to get, again, an adult to see that and think, I've never thought about how I'd get out of my house if I couldn't get down my stairs and my children are on the second floor. How would we do that? It forces them to think of an escape plan. It forces them to take action, or at least pushes them in that direction. This year is, what's your second way to get to your children? If you cannot get to your children from inside the house, which we all know is very possible in a fire, what's your other way to get to your child? And again, that is hopefully is going to spawn and push people to think about that, ask questions, encourage fire departments to come in to discuss those things. So it's just a different message that will help spur a conversation, just like we do around in the fire service, different things to get conversations going. That's where you get your best results. So that's a message hopefully we'll approach as a county to kind of get those conversations going and ideas out there.
Interesting. Bill Delaney?
We're actually thinking of a couple things. Sadly, as you well know, upon your retirement, we had a little reorg, and obviously some of our division was sort of eliminated. So one of the things we are batting around, though, is each of the individual stations usually have an open house that mostly our volunteer partners run, and we support them as best we can. But we're talking about possibly having one great big open house at our Public Safety Training Academy to get the public out. And from a region perspective, I think Dan said on something, too, that I think is a good message overall. And we try to do it here in the Washington metro area, where we partner up a lot of times. We did it for the fireworks, getting all the area fire chiefs together with a common message. I think the more that people can do that throughout the country and get everyone on the same page with common messaging and to share resources too, kind of as a side note, we found that in the Washington Metro area too, that we share resources, not everyone has to do the work. We share costs, so to speak. I think that's a huge benefit. But we will probably be, again, doing some sort of a press event with all the regional fire chiefs, because that does tend to attract, and I know for the fireworks thing, we had a tremendous media turnout. I mean, everyone from the Spanish language media to all the main media partners to, again, we did some things that I took pictures for our YouTube site. So we're going to do something like that. And we're batting around a couple ideas but we're not totally sure.
Billy Hayes, how about D.C. As far as Fire Prevention Week, thoughts?
I'm going to steer the ship in a different direction, as you probably knew I would. But what I specifically want to talk about, and our focus is going to remain on smoke alarms. I think we've identified that there's such a need for smoke alarms. That's going to be where our focus is for Fire Prevention Week all year long, but specifically that week. And I'm steering the ship in the direction towards that, as I agree that we should have the common theme and having the resources available. But I also think it's incumbent upon fire departments to really step up. Daniel mentioned earlier for the fire departments to be accountable with things. Departments need to be accountable as to identifying what the risks are in their community, because it does vary. What may be in Beaufort, South Carolina, or Riverdale, Georgia, or Washington, D.C., or Santa Barbara, California, our risks are different. Our resources available for those risks are different. So it's really incumbent upon a fire department and an organization to identify what their issues are. And we can say that cooking fires are the leading cause of fires, and cigarettes are the leading cause of fire fatalities nationally, and that's going to be our theme that the NFPA puts out. Well, I can tell you in Washington, D.C. in 2009, we had 19 fire fatalities, and our leading cause was electrical fires.
Interesting.
Very few were cooking. There were a couple smoking, but almost a majority of them were electrical, which doesn't really play out into what the national theme is. So it's really important for fire departments to be held accountable to identify what their risks are. If they're going to be responsible for mitigating those risks and reducing their risks, they better know what they are.
Yeah, I agree. And we've had conversation about that a couple times today already around here. Well, this has really been good. I do want to maybe wrap this up. And we've been going for about an hour, and that's a good, healthy time. But we are here live at Firehouse.com or Firehouse Expo in Baltimore, Maryland, the 2010 Expo. And we have a group of people that are here in the audience that have been listening to our conversation. And I wanted to see if anybody had any comments or questions of the panel, or just something that you'd like to say in regard to fine life safety, and feel free. We'll keep talking, and if you come up to the mic, we'll give you an opportunity to talk. Why don't you tell us your name, where you're from, and what you'd like to talk about?
Name is Dylan Murray with Howard County Department of Fire Rescue Services, right here in Maryland. One thing I keep hearing, and I have to stop and think. Everybody here keeps talking about all these things that they're doing. You're dealing with councils, you're dealing with codes, you're dealing with education, your public relations. It's so broad. How does somebody get started? Somebody that might be out there listening right now that maybe wants to move towards a shift of being a public educator full-time, how would they get started? Where should they go for classes? What should they do to start moving towards that type of career to get themselves lined up for it?
My first thought, and hopefully we're eliminating some of that now, because as I mentioned in my presentation today, when I first started, there was nothing out there. And I built a lot of what we do in Beaufort. We built through trial and error, and some of those errors were pretty painful. So hopefully Firehouse has really stepped up this year with a lot of prevention-oriented classes. So my suggestion to someone who wants to get started, there's Fire and Life Safety Educator 1 and 2 out there. I would direct them to the National Fire Academy. There's a lot of entry-level prevention courses out there. At the same time, you get the training, you network a great deal. Go online and research, understanding what your community are, what your fire problems are, and asking questions. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. There's plenty of stuff out there for assistance. It can seem very overwhelming. It absolutely can. What I tell fire prevention time, every now and again I'll get emails from people that were in my presentation, some ideas of what they could do this year. And just for initial start, take a look at your community, pick the top two fire hazards that are out there. Where are they happening? Who are they happening to? How could the fire department get out and make contact with those resources in those presentations just on those fire hazards involving a particular neighborhood, a particular community, and then come up with a program that, one, will teach them how to prevent that from occurring, how to react to it, and then how to survive it. Real quick messages, and then you can kind of expand from there. But the longest journey begins with the first step. And the last thing I'd tell them is do not get discouraged. It's very, very easy when you're in the prevention field to get discouraged. Very easily to do it. It takes a long time. We've been doing fire and life safety education for about 7 years now, and we've seen a 60% reduction in fires, but it was a lot of work and a lot of years and a lot of setbacks. So stay positive, network, seek out the training, and just take a look at your community and think outside the box. Be creative.
And I think a lot of that training that Dan mentioned too, National Fire Academy, it's free.
Absolutely. Great resource.
I mean, theoretically, your taxes pay for it, though, too. So maybe you did pay a little bit. But
no out-of-pocket from the fire department.
But no out-of-pocket from the fire department other than your time. Everything else is reimbursed. So now, yes, I understand sometimes time can be an issue, but that's only expense. And as I mentioned earlier, the online NFA class, it's a very basic cursory class. For just that person that Dylan was talking about, that's just brand spanking new. Again, free, online, and echo everything that Dan just said. I mean, there's stuff. Mike Love here created a Yahoo group, National Fire Life Safety Educators. Look on Yahoo, you can find it. Great exchanges, again, for free. That, as Dan said, I mean, there's plenty of stuff out there. That we've all, that you don't have to reinvent the wheel, and that's a great group, and that you just ask a question, hey, I need this, and all of a sudden, yeah, people just, hey, I got this, and here's a PowerPoint here, and so that's just an awesome resource for anyone new.
And check with your local school teachers, too, that'd be a resource to help put together an educational program, something simple, and that if you only have a couple minutes, get the biggest bang for your buck. School teachers, local colleges, a lot of the students that are going through the colleges to become teachers have projects they have to do. Well, a project would be come up with a fire and life safety program for this particular issue. So kind of use some of those community resources to help you put it all together. Thinking outside the box, I think that's the big thing, thinking outside the box.
Well, networking's a key. Networking's a key because fire safety education is nothing new. And there's people that's been doing it for years. So there's a lot of information available, and while there may be over 30,000 departments in this country, this great country of ours, it's a small fire service because somebody knows somebody and there's a connection somewhere that you may talk to this person that has a great program and somebody else has utilized it somewhere else. And the diversity of the programs, think outside the box, as Daniel said, of more than just what your community looks like and only comparing it to other organizations that are similar to that. Some departments that are smaller have greater programs and some departments that are bigger. So network diversity.
Yeah, and I'll add to that some great suggestions, folks. And the NFPA, National Fire Protection Association, has a fire and life safety education section that specifically addresses that. So you can contact people in that as references. And the International Association of Fire Chiefs has a fire and life safety section, and those people know others who are involved in those things. So all of the big advocacy groups are very much involved. The Association of Hispanic Firefighters is a very big, has a very big outreach program that they sponsor and are actively involved in. So if you Googled, fire safety education, you're going to get an overwhelming amount. A lot of the states have chapters of an association for fire safety educators. So, any one of us, I'm sure, would provide you.
And the Black Professional Firefighters Association's got a new program out called Stop Fire. It's a great program on kitchen fire safety, but the message is the same regardless of the demographics or the race.
Yep. And the United States Fire Administration, a lot of pamphlets and coloring books and things for free. And the sad thing is I haven't talked to them in a while, but last I heard that they were going to have to scale back because people just weren't asking for it. But you can get up to 100 pamphlets on anything from cooking safety to escape drills, coloring books for the kids, free of charge. Videos, free of charge.
Safety Council.
Yes, expertly produced, great stuff. A lot of insurance companies will help pay for that, too, if you wanted to go to the NFPA. So there's a lot of resources out there. The United States Fire Administration provides a tremendous resource for free that I think we all need to utilize and tap into.
Home Safety Absolutely. Council does as well. A lot of free stuff and a lot of great data.
So Expert Network program.
It's just endless.
Just offline, we could talk about these kind of things. I could guide you towards all kinds of things. But great question. Appreciate that. Anybody else in the audience want to... Okay, we have somebody making their way to the podium. Tell us who you are. And,
good evening. I'm Firefighter Ruth Gray from D.C. Fire Department. I just want to make some points in relation to getting out more to the media and some of the questions you were asking. I say more media attention as far as, like, for the kids, start up with the kids, get more DVDs out, more with catchy tunes that they can keep in their head. I still remember... On TV, they had that thing, Conjunction Junction, an English thing. I still remember that.
I do too.
Shall we sing?
What's your function?
If we can get some catchy tunes to keep the in the
I'm
kids'
the
head,
bill.
They can utilize that in real life. Just like now, I'm starting to hear a lot of the things on the news saying that kids learn this from looking at SpongeBob. But they're learning from it. So if we can do that, as far as other high schools or whether, do more school presentations, be more active in the schools, like doing more fire safety assemblies. I remember when I was in school, we had a lot of fire assemblies with MPD and police, and fire. And that stuff stuck in my head. I remember when the MPD had their band, when we did good things, and they gave us a big assembly and had a band. If we can bring those things back. Also, radio stations. If we can reach out to the radio stations that all the kids listen to, the teenagers listen to, and the adults. I think that will be helpful. One thing that DC does, and now I'm part of it, is we have a CERT team. And I teach that once a month, and that's called Community Emergency Response Team, and they're all adults. And what they do is they learn different aspects of emergency and safety, life safety presentation, and they take it back to their community. And they're getting a big feedback with that. I usually have at least 15 adults in a class at night. And also last, for other media attention, you said a billboard with the bus, but also let's do it on, we have the Metro. Why can't we put some billboards inside the Metro?
Good point.
And that's it.
Well, thank you very much, Firefighter Kate.
And actually, I'd like to say real quick, too, with the radio, I forgot to mention one of the social media things we do is we actually have a radio show, a blog talk radio show, again, for free, that can download to iTunes, and you can listen to it live. People can call and interact with you. You can actually track how many people are listening to you, how many people go back and listen to it after it's been recorded. So it's a great way, too, because more and more, I think, some of what you're saying, even with the media stuff, more and more people are looking for local media, and they're looking for it through the internet. And I think we're going to have to start gearing up to be, to some degree, our own sort of media production companies, because there's going to be Google TV pretty soon, Yahoo TV. Computers and your TVs are going to be one. And it's just something to think about for the future. But again, the good news is, like with the Blog Talk Radio, it's all free. And it doesn't take much to do it. Just
and absurdly
a phone line.
Simple.
It is absurdly simple that even, yes, I can do it. Or a caveman.
The internet and all, you still have to remember the seniors. They're not privy to computers and all, so we still have to reach out to them.
Right. Oh, absolutely. It's like Dan said earlier. I think we have to do everything. We have to actually do the face-to-face stuff and get out there and do it. I agree 100%.
I'd like to add one thing with the media. great points for utilizing the media to get those things out there. And for fire departments that would like to do that, they've got to understand it's a give and take, a quid pro quo, I guess. To just show up in October demanding that these PSAs get done or these news releases get done, it's not going to be effective. That to work with the media means working with the media all year long, which means when you have fires, have a PIO program and work with the media from all events, give them the quotes, give them what they need, and that type of relationship will eventually lead into exactly what you're talking about. But I see too many departments show up in October and they start demanding, and you will, and it just goes downhill from there. So it's a relationship that has to be built all year long and utilized, a give and take.
Well, you know, interestingly, we shouldn't wait once a year to do this.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And we can do that by phone. We should talk to firehouse.com about that. Did you have a comment?
I did. Thank you. Excellent program. I'm Wayne Smith, retired deputy chief in Boise City, Idaho, currently a county commissioner in Jim County, Idaho.
Welcome to the East.
Thank you. I think one of the things that I learned after my career that there is way more opportunity for networking outside of the fire service than we allow. We tend to get in our own little cocoon, and we network between chiefs, fire marshals, and everything like that. Since becoming county commissioner, I have been way more involved in LEPSI, in CERT. I'm glad that CERT got brought in up. And I began to realize, as much as we struggled with LEPSI when I was in the fire service, the reason we struggled is because we only focused on emergency things. LEPSI is way more valuable, CERT is way more valuable than just the emergency. And if we don't network with them on fire prevention type issues, we will not have them in the emergency.
And just so people know, LEPSI is Local Emergency Planning Council,
Committee. Correct?
Committee. Great, thank you. Just there may be somebody out there that's not aware. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I wasn't going to say anything.
I apologize. I thought that was a pretty standard nationwide thing. It was just in the West. We are required by statute to have LEPSIs in order to get funding through state agencies. And LEPSI organizations are put in, and when I was in the fire service, we specifically targeted those high-risk type of things like power companies, police sat on it, dispatch, those things in the emergency. But it is very effective. We've had great success bringing schools. Chamber of Commerce is an excellent one. Mm-hmm. We talked about the need for getting the message out to people. There's nobody that wants to stay in business more than the Chamber of Commerce, and they are the talking force, and they are their cocoon too. And we don't understand how they work unless we bring them in and sit down and have these discussions with them. And it is surprising how forward-thinking that they are. They will take our message out and make it their message too. So we have a lot of those resources. The other association that I've taught.
Do you mind if I ask you a question? Are you an elected official to that commission position?
Elected.
And you represent a constituency. That's great. We have an elected official here. You know, it's not always that we get that kind of attention. Good. Thank you.
And the Ministerial Association sits on our LEPSI Council. So anybody that we can get that represents a group, we invite to the LEPSI Council so that we can talk about these issues. We do talk about emergencies. We do have tabletop exercises. And they are present because they have been present in these other activities that we're doing. So is there anything like that going on in your area?
Yeah, I think actually the LEPCs are federally mandated, and it comes down through the state. And generally, the governor appoints these committees throughout the jurisdictions. And depending on how, you know, the population size, they'll be big or they'll be more compact in a smaller area. So I think it's you know, nationwide.
When I was a city fire on city fire, we had a city LEPSI. My county is chosen to, because I'm one of the pushers on it, is chosen that we have a county-wide LEPSI that does all the planning and stuff for emergencies and local events. So.
Great. Well, thanks for taking the time to step up and make your comments. I appreciate it. Anybody else like to talk? This is a great opportunity. If not, I want to thank our panel, Billy Hayes from Washington, D.C. Fire and EMS, Bill Delaney from Montgomery County, Maryland Fire and Rescue Service, and Dan Byrne from Buford, South Carolina.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for being here at Southline.
And we've been talking live from Firehouse Expo, and this is a podcast for fire and life safety educators. And we're in Baltimore, Maryland. It's 2010. Thank you all very much.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.